Good morning. I want to welcome you to a panel discussion on the Great Commission Resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention. We're going to get to that conversation, an important conversation for all of us. And first, I want to introduce those who will be participating. Dr. Russell Moore is, of course, Dean of the School of Theology and Senior Vice President for Academic Administration at the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. And we're honored to have Dr. Moore joining us. Jonathan Aiken is the lead pastor of Highview Baptist Church at Valley Station. He's a graduate of Boyce College. He received his Master of Divinity from Southern Seminary and is currently working on his Ph.D. in Old Testament. Jonathan's married to Ashley, and they have two girls, Maddie and Emma Grace. Jonathan, we're very glad to have you. Chuck Lawless is Dean of the Billy Graham School of Missions and Evangelism and is a longtime friend to the Great Commission, and we're very, very thankful to have Chuck here. Chuck and his wife, Pam, have been all over the world, as Chuck also works as a liaison with the International Mission Board of the Southern Baptist Convention. And Chuck, we're very glad to have you as a part of this panel. And Nick Moore is the lead pastor of the Spencer County campus of Highview Baptist Church. He holds a Bachelor of Arts degree from Boyce College and is currently pursuing the Master of Divinity here in the School of Theology. Nick's been married to Kendra for 5 years, and they have four children, Jacob, James, Elizabeth, and the fourth, who is due in December of 09, yet to be announced. That's exciting. We're very glad to have all of you here. We're talking about something that is, new and old in terms of nomenclature. The Great Commission, it's very interesting. The Christian Church, in particular evangelicals, have talked about the Great Commission for at least 200 years, just as a title and an item of nomenclature. But to add the word resurgence to it, is to date this conversation to a fairly recent vintage. Jonathan Aiken, where did this come from?
Well, it came from the conservative resurgence that started around 1979 with the election of Adrian Rogers, trying to return our institutions and entities to biblical orthodoxy away from moderate theology at the time. And so from 1979 until now, only conservative presidents have been elected, conservative trustees appointed to the boards, and so there has been a turn back to biblical orthodoxy within our institutions, and so that was called the conservative resurgence, and so the Great Commission resurgence is building off of that, because one of the promises of the conservative resurgence is at some point kind of we're going to get our theology right so that we can cooperate together. We know this is what we agree on, and we can cooperate together in terms of that agreement to reach the nations for Christ. And so
now, the word resurgence was important because the conservative resurgence in the SBC was not understood to be just a matter of an elite addressing a political structure, but rather an urgency that was coming from the churches. And this was a resurgence of the kind of conservative conviction that had marked the Southern Baptist Convention from its founding. And so there's a sense of resurgence, recovery, reformation. Russ Moore, put that into context for us. We're sitting in the year 2009, and now we're using the word resurgence again. Are we talking about a movement?
Well, that's why I think the situations are a little bit different, because the conservative resurgence wasn't taking a liberal denomination and making it conservative. It was an already conservative denomination being led by people who were liberal and moderate. And so the churches were calling the denomination to say, let's recover what we used to have at the institutional level, but what we already have at the local church level. With a Great Commission resurgence, I think there's something bigger involved, because it seems to me that we're calling not only the institutions to be more Great Commission oriented and effective, but also local congregations, and saying we need to have a complete turnaround across the board in the denomination toward a passion for the Great Commission that maybe we haven't had for a long time. So in that sense, I think it's not a one-to-one comparison. It might be something different. It could be something even bigger and broader.
Chuck Lawless, when the conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention started gaining traction, especially from the years 1979 through 1990, in that 11 or 12-year period, it was fueled by a sense of urgency. We've got to do this because so much is at stake. There are institutions that will be and go liberal. There is a trajectory for the denomination that is leading us to doctrinal disaster. I gain the sense that, at least in terms of those of us who are trying to frame the reality of a Great Commission resurgence, that we're trying to sound a very similar alarm about an urgency. Would you just articulate that as you see it, first of all, just individually and as a pastor in the SBC, but also as the dean of the Billy Graham School?
Sure. I've written elsewhere that we took a stand for a message in the conservative resurgence that we have chosen to keep to ourselves. And it seems to me that while we took the right stand and stood strong in the Word of God and worked toward all the changes that we have seen institutionally, we did not take that and turn that into a commitment to reach the world for Christ. In fact, I wonder if resurgence isn't even a misnomer, because I don't know that we can look back and find a time when we just, as local churches and individuals, had a heartbeat for the world, for the Great Commission. And now there are a number of folks who are saying, we must get to the gospel going to the ends of the earth and we reaching out to our neighbors. And if we don't do that, all that we've done to stand for the Word says that we have a message, but we're not proclaiming it as we should.
This week, I've decided to redefine young adulthood into the 50s. But if I'm going to be successful at doing that, I'm going to have to admit that there's a younger young adulthood behind young adulthood. And looking at it that way, I just want to ask the question, Nick, straightforwardly, what's the generational component here? I mean, is this a situation in which you have a real cry from a generation, an urgency from a generation? Let me put it even more bluntly than that. Is this a season in which a generation of young pastors and emerging leaders in the SBC is deciding on whether to buy into the SBC or not, to join in the SBC?
I believe it is. It is a decisive hour. I think that there are many people who are making that decision right now. I think largely on the part of pastors who have gone ahead of us, who have taught us good theology, who have taught us how to be passionate for the nations, and because we understand the cry that's coming forth from 3.4 billion people across the nations who have little no gospel witness, and we've been taught a gospel heritage of a Southern Baptist convention that was formed and founded to reach those people for Christ, and we're just wondering if that's what we're called to do, what's the most effective way for us to do it, and just honestly, should we partner with the Southern Baptist Convention in doing that? And I believe we should, and I think that many people are making that decision now as well.
We need to follow up on that a bit and think about that. I want to turn to the theological issues that you addressed there. Russ, you know, when the moderates look at the current SBC and criticize, and you and I read that mail, we know what that looks like. One of the things they will say is that the conservative leadership back in the 70s and the 80s and the 90s promised that if indeed the Southern Baptist Convention would recover biblical inerrancy and a confessional identity, that there would emerge a Great Commission intensity. They didn't use the word resurgence, but a Great Commission intensity. And they're now pointing the finger and saying, look at the statistics, look at the trends, it hasn't happened. Is that a fair critique?
To some degree it is. In one way it's not. Tom Rainer did this study several years ago in which he was showing the fact that conservative surgeons did not do what was promised in terms of the Great Commission. But he also showed that if the trajectory hadn't been turned around, it would be much, much worse, which you can look at those groups that left the Southern Baptist Convention and see what's happening with missions there, and it's nothing. It's become captive to pluralism and a number of other things. It's not Great Commission oriented. They were committed to a program more than they were committed to a Great Commission. But it's fair in the sense that the conservative resurgence did not, I think, leading back to your previous question, did not cultivate the following generations. In many ways, our churches and our institutions became ego-driven, and it became very, very difficult to see a passing of the baton. So that you had older generations almost seeing the generations coming behind as rivals, which is one of the reasons why sometimes younger people in the Southern Baptist Convention will say, you go to the SBC meeting and you've got the same cast of characters every single year, and it's the same cast of characters that were there in 1990. You know, it just continues on. That's a real problem. And also the kind of rivalry and bitterness toward one another that you see not just at the national level, but in local churches, lack of the fruit of the Spirit, which is necessary for the carrying out of the Great Commission. Sometimes I almost want to go back. I used to go to these liberal Baptist meetings, Cooperative Baptist Fellowship, and I'd listen to the things that they would say. Sometimes I would want to say, you're wrong about the Bible and you're wrong about Jesus, but you're right about us in many, many ways. And you can see that at local church after local church after local church, where in order to have a fire for the Great Commission, you first got to have love for one another, and a love that then extends out to beyond the borders of the church.
Jonathan, I want to follow up on the theology a bit more here, because I think this is an inadequate nexus in terms of how so many people consider the Great Commission resurgence, the current issues before the SBC, expectations for the 2010 Southern Baptist Convention. I asked Russ very pointedly if the moderates were right, and he responded in a way that I think is very helpful. I think it's clear that had the SBC continued in the direction it was going, we would now be talking about a post-closed opportunity for a Great Commission resurgence. We now have the opportunity. But I want to step back from that and ask you if it's fair to say, given where we sit in 2009, that the conservative resurgence in the SBC basically achieved the opportunity for a Great Commission resurgence. It didn't assure it, but it seems to me we can certainly make the argument that it earned the opportunity.
Yes, I would agree with that for a couple of reasons. One, because theology has to drive mission. I think that's true across the board, not just in terms of our large structures, but in terms of the church. We have to let theology drive method and mission instead of, you know, going towards pragmatism or whatever it is that we think is going to work. And so it did achieve that because we did, in terms of the institutions, return to our orthodox, founding beliefs of the founders that we were founded upon. However, I think we've achieved the opportunity for a Great Commission resurgence, and I would agree that it's not for sure. It's not certain. And the reason why I would think that the answer to that question you asked Dr. Moore is kind of yes and no is that we have returned theologically, but we've changed nothing structurally. Like, our theology should drive our practice. James tells us this, that faith without works is dead, but it hasn't changed our practice one bit. We've just exchanged one bureaucracy for another. And so that, we're not going to, unless we begin to look at ourselves and begin to sacrifice and to actually have a Great Commission intensity personally, congregationally, and then in terms of the convention entities, we're not going to see a Great Commission resurgence because we're just exchanging one bureaucracy for another. And our practice has not matched up with our theology. When we still have, by and large, 2/3 of every dollar staying in states that are saturated with churches rather than going to the foreign mission field, then no matter what we say with our lips, our practice betrays something completely different. And so even here in the state of Kentucky, 63 cents out of every dollar that is given to the cooperative program stays in the state of Kentucky, where there are 4 million people and 2,400 Baptist churches. My brother serves in a country overseas in which there are 70 million people in that country, that one country alone. We have more Baptist churches in Kentucky than they have believers in that nation of 70 million. And we're keeping 63 cents out of the dollar to reach 4 million people, and they have 70 million people. And the younger generation is looking at this and saying, that doesn't make any sense with the theology that we've been taught.
All right, hold the math for just a minute.
Okay.
Because before you can get to that distribution, you've got well over 90 cents of every dollar staying in the local church before it goes on. So we got a lot of math to deal with here. We'll get to the math. I want to stick with the theology for a moment.
But that's some interesting math, isn't it?
It is, absolutely. And it's math that betrays a theology, which is why I want to turn to Chuck Lawless. I'm going to challenge something Jonathan Aiken said. He's a profoundly wise man, otherwise he wouldn't be sitting here on this panel. But he was far too generous in a statement that he just made. He said, we are not living up to our theology. As a theologian, one of my major principles is we always live up to our theology. You want to find out what we believe? Find out what we do. So I want to ask you pointedly, do Southern Baptists believe people are lost?
The evidence of our actions would say we do not believe that. That we stay in the pew, we cocoon ourselves in the church, and the church has become a place to retreat from a world that needs Jesus rather than a place to rearm for the battle. We have our DMin students do surveys, theological surveys of their congregations. And most of the time, our pastors are deeply disappointed in what they learn, that sitting in the pew are inclusivist at best, pluralist, and sometimes universalist. And they're in our churches and at times leading our churches.
The data is pretty devastating here. And before we get to any structural issue or financial issue, I just don't think we can in good conscience leave the theological issues without coming full circle and saying that the Great Commission is predicated upon a certain theological structure, which is very easy to understand. And that is that persons are lost, dead in their trespasses and sins, and headed for hell. And the only rescue comes from what God has accomplished for us in Christ. And as Paul says in Romans chapter 10, the salvation comes to those who profess with their lips that Jesus Christ is Lord and believe in their heart that God has raised him from the dead. You know, the logic of Romans chapter 10 is very clear. If they do not hear, they will not believe. All who call upon the name of the Lord will be saved, but they must hear in order to believe, in order to be saved. The logic of Romans 10 is the Great Commission logic. If they never hear, they will never believe. If no one preaches, they will never hear. If no one is sent, no one will preach. That's how the SBC came into existence in 1845, as people who deeply believed that. That's what has held the SBC together. You look back at a crisis like the Great Depression of the 1930s. What held Southern Baptists together? An understanding that people were lost and that it mattered. And that there was only one gospel that saves. We have evidence from Robert Wethnow, from Christian Smith, from James Davison Hunter, and from the DMin, you know, projects you're talking about, and from pastors, from campus ministers, that Southern Baptists, even when they say, they know what they're supposed to say in many cases, when they say that, they really don't believe that. And what we've really suffered is a complete theological transformation on the part of a lot of people in the pew, not because they're being taught heresy, but because they are really drinking deeply from a secular worldview around them that treats the exclusivity of the gospel as an unthinkable kind of thought. You know, Nick, you are a preacher, a pastor, and you're also a part of a generation that is really very statistically traceable on these issues. What happened?
I think one of the major things that you've seen happen is that a generation of pastors seems to have, in many ways, assumed the gospel. Particularly on the heels of the conservative resurgence, that we know the gospel is the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus, and all who call upon the name of the Lord will be saved. And so we come into churches and we assume people know that and that they don't need to hear that anymore. And so we preach a series of practical helps and lifestyles. And a new generation coming up after that simply assumes what Christianity is this practical way of just living it out, rather than understanding that all of life is summed up in that story of God sending his son to rescue us from our sins, and that Jesus coming to redeem the world is what should impact everything that we do, from the way that we preach, seeing Jesus as the center of Scripture and the one in whom all the promises of God find their yes and amen, from the way that we live to the how we see our resources as not our own, but the Lord's, and we're stewards of those. And to the way that we think about methodology, that the gospel is the center, not any tradition, not any tribe, not any sort of bureaucracy that we're tied to, but it's around the gospel and that central story. So making the gospel center.
Russ Moore, if indeed we're facing a theological crisis here, as I genuinely believe, and if the window for some kind of recovery on this is short, as generations prove, then what should Southern Baptists have at the forefront of our imagination before we go to the SBC in any given year and gather for an annual meeting, before we adopt budgets in the local church or the state convention or the national convention, before we get frustrated or excited about one denominational program or another? What do we got to have right before we can even start a reasonable and a responsible conversation about these things?
Repentance. I think that that's going to mean pastors who are willing to cast another vision of what life in Christ can be like that many of the people in their congregations have never seen before in their lives. And calling congregations, even those congregations that seem to be successful and doing things well, to a repentance and a brokenness of saying we're going to turn this around internally so that we can turn it around externally together. And that means judging any given congregation by how that congregation is on mission with Christ and how that congregation is reflecting Christ through the fruit of the Spirit coming through that local congregation. Then I think it means having a different way of thinking about missions. And I think all of us have seen the missions conferences before in which we have the same thing taking place. Missionary comes in, says something in the language of his people, holds up a pottery shard and says, this is what's going on in my people group, and talks about this, and you really ought to give more money to the cooperative program. Everybody yawns and claps and says, we really will do more next time. But it sounds to most people in our churches like you're saying, you really ought to be more involved in the PTA. Come on, you know you should. And everybody, yeah, we know we should. The PTA is great. The IMB is great. There has to be a different way of seeing what's going on with global missions, which is the response, not only the denomination, local church pastors, and the missionaries. We've got a new young generation of missionaries that we need to see more of who are able to come in and not just connect with the people that God has given them to, but also connecting with the people back here in the States, saying, I'm not just being sent out to do something. You are with me, and this is how this matters to you. That's got to happen.
Jonathan, you spoke comparing the state of Kentucky to an unnamed land overseas. And in doing so, you said, I am here and my brother is there. You actually have two brothers on the mission field, both Paul and Timothy, along with their families. You have a perspective just based upon that, that puts you in a very different position than most Southern Baptists. Why is it that most of us simply don't see what the cry of the nations really represents?
One is exposure. I think there hasn't, in years past, been as much exposure. I think this kind of wave of short-term trips is becoming bigger, and churches are getting more of their people exposed to the lostness of the world. I think some of it has to come back to these presentations that just are just kind of disconnected. You're not able to feel the heart of that. I think one reason why is, I couldn't judge motives, or I just don't think we've educated, I don't think pastors have educated their people. The statistics I gave just a second ago, I've done that twice in the last 2 months, or last month, in a church in Indiana and a church here in Kentucky. And people who in the pews have been Baptist their entire life, 40, 50, 60 years, had no idea how much of our resources stay here and how much go on. And these are people who've been involved, local association at every level, and said, are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? How do they justify that? And they revolt. I mean, these are people who are hardline Southern Baptists. And so I don't know if we've educated our people. They think because the picture on the brochure shows a distant land that when they give their money, it's going there. But they don't. It's our fault. We haven't educated them to the reality. And when we do, they get very passionate and sometimes angry about it. And so I think it's exposure, and I think it's education. In some ways. And I think what you said is right. I think that we're not at all levels. This is not a convention. This at all levels, individually, we're not sacrificing. We're not counting the cost for the Great Commission. And so it starts with me. It starts with pastor, being a pastor at my church. And so it starts there. But yeah, I do have a great perspective for this, and because my brothers, I text messaged them this morning, told them I loved them, because they're there, and I know the dangers that they're going through, and those kinds of things. And so I think what Dr. Moore said is exactly right. Missions needs to be at all levels in the Southern Baptist Convention. We need to become more local church driven, primacy local church, and we need to have, I mean, close ties between our missionaries and the local churches that are sending them, and not just, oh, we filled out a piece of paper. And so we say it's local church driven because we filled out a piece of paper.
Chuck Lawless, you're in a unique position as well, serving as dean of the Billy Graham School and also with your work with the International Mission Board. And I'm going to put you on the spot here, okay? A little word of warning. It seems to me that one of the issues that we face is the success of the International Mission Board. The IMB, over the last 150 plus years, has established a missiology, a structure. Even in recent months, they have updated their missiology in ways that I find incredibly encouraging. They have a track record of getting people to the field and, in comparison with other mission agencies, keeping them on the field. And the IMB doing well is a part of why I think a lot of Southern Baptists think we have bought a great missions program. And we have a great missions program. And I just want to tell you that I find that one of the most daunting challenges we face looking at a Great Commission resurgence. Have Southern Baptists really decided that we've bought a good program and it's working, and as long as we keep, you know, the payments going to that program, we're pretty much serving the Great Commission and honoring Christ?
I do think it's easier to see our doing missions by giving dollars than it is by going, by praying, by sending as churches. So I do think Southern Baptists have equated our missionary success with giving through our Christmas offering, which I think we still must do. I think we're caught now because we're low on funds with missionaries ready to go who can't go out. So I still want us to think about the giving. But I think we have defaulted to let's give more, and assume that that has now created great commission success. And we're not there.
Could I speak to that for just a second?
You go ahead.
I think that we need to redefine missions-minded, what it means to be missions-minded. And this is something that happened to me a couple of years ago. I was out of town in my wife's hometown, and I wanted to have breakfast with her family's pastor. And so I set this breakfast with him, and we just talked about ministry. But then we did for just a second talk about some of these issues. And he said, you know, it's interesting that you bring that up, because there was a couple that had been visiting his church for months and had come almost every week, but they hadn't joined the church. And so he asked them, he said, why? He just kind of pulled them aside one day. Why haven't you joined the church? They said, well, we love the church, but we just cannot in good conscience join a church that's not missions minded. And that just blew him away. He's like, wait a minute, we send missionaries all the time. We have all these short-term trips. We're planting these churches. Why in the world would you say that? And the wife pulled out a copy of the State Baptist paper and said, well, you don't give any money to the CP. And what happened is, in that state, they did give money to the CP. They gave every bit of their money through the state convention, but there's a liberal college in their state, and they designated, we're going to give this money to the state convention, but we don't want you to give any of our money to that institution. Instead, whatever you're going to send to that institution, send to the IMB. And because of that, they get counted for zero giving to the CP. And so this couple, you guys aren't missions minded. Well, that's ridiculous. We need to define missions minded by how many people we send, not just monetary resources that we send.
All right. We have a sense that something's wrong. We have a sense of urgency that needs to be isolated in terms of the urgency. And so let me ask a question of all of you. Are we trying to save the SBC? Is that what the Great Commission Resurgence is about? Is this about trying to turn back pernicious and downward statistics? Is this about saving and salvaging a denominational structure? Or is this about capturing the energies of a generation for the Great Commission? I think we better answer that question and do it right up front. Russ?
Well, I don't think it's either or, because what you have in place with the SBC, you mentioned the IMB a few minutes ago and its success. If the Southern Baptist Convention were to collapse right now, all of evangelical Christianity would be in a very, very difficult situation, because the IMB and the way that Southern Baptist cooperation works is just an incredibly effective way to get the gospel to the nations. It works better than any of the alternatives that most of us living here today have seen. It's not to say it's the only way to do it. It's not to say that there'll ever be something that's better. But so far in church history, this is remarkably a good way to do it. So simply giving up on that and walking away from 5,000 missionaries across the world, a way of cooperating together from people who are unified and yet diverse, that'd be a tragic thing to do. Having said that, simply assuming that generation after generation after generation is going to pick up the status quo and do things exactly like the generation before is a false understanding of seeing how this thing is going to work. And so I think this has to be kind of a rebuking call generationally in both directions, which is to say to the generation ahead, get over yourself. Stop being so personal, kingdom, ego oriented, and invest yourself in something bigger and more than yourself. And then saying to the younger generation, get over yourself. Stop sulking and poking your lip out and saying, I'm just going to walk away and go do something else. And both of you come together in a spirit of repentance and say, God's given us this opportunity to reach the world. Let's do it and figure out how to do it.
I'm a product of the Southern Baptist Convention. I love the Southern Baptist Convention. I'm hoping to be a three-time graduate of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary. My mom was raised in the Georgia Baptist Children's Home. My dad was trained and has been employed in Southern Baptist institutions. I love the SBC. I love the IMB. We have the largest Protestant missionary force in the history of the church. That's incredible. That's absolutely unbelievable. And having said that, I hope that the Great Commission Resurgence isn't about saving the SBC. Although I agree with everything that Dr. Moore just said, the collapse would be enormous. But I hope it's more about the SBC refocusing on what it was meant to be from the beginning, and that is a means by which local churches cooperate together to do more together than we could do apart. And I think the organization is effective. We are starting to ask and do need to ask in every generation the question, can it be more effective and are there things that we need to adapt? But I want to see a return to the primacy of the local church, in which the church is the body ordained and commissioned by Christ to carry out his mission in the world. And my fear is that that's not the way it is right now. And my concern is that at one side, again, use Dr. Moore's categories, the generation that's gone on before us is kind of tightening their grip and saying, if we don't do something, it's going to collapse. And as they tighten their grips, it begins to collapse even more. And then the generation behind is saying, oh, this is ridiculous. I don't need it. I'm going somewhere else. And walking
and then
away from...
find the somewhere else.
Somewhere...
That's the difficult part.
Yeah, the somewhere else is, I'm going to do it on my own.
Yeah.
And I think, one, that's a slap in the face of people who have invested in you and have brought you to where you're at, and men that have gone before us that I have great respect for, and they're my heroes. So it's a slap in the face, and I get tired of hearing the whining and that thing. But we do need to return to the primacy of the local church.
About the whining.
I'll stop crying about the whining. but we do. I think the way that it's set up right now betrays that many people believe that the church serves the convention does not serve the church. And so when you have people like one of the executive directors in one of our state conventions making statements like, if the churches will start giving 10% to the CP, I can guarantee that the states will go to a 50-50 split. Well, number one, that's ridiculous. You can't guarantee that. Number two, that's betraying that you think the church is called to serve you rather than you serving the church. And so maybe a lot of churches are saying, and young pastors and even older pastors are saying, hey, if the giving structure is not matching what we feel the priority of the mission of Christ is, then we'll just choose some other way. And so you have young pastors who are very, very prominent right now cutting checks for $500,000 to other organizations rather than sending to the SBC.
Chuck?
Two central questions for me. One is, how do we individually and then corporately reinvest in the work of my going to my neighbor to share Christ, my going to other people in my city, in my state, in this nation, and ultimately the ends of the earth to take the gospel that we say we believe where it needs to go? How do we restart that in our denomination, starting with us individually? Second question is, how do we capture the energy of guys like these? For all of us who've invested in the SBC, we begin to think about even as young adults like you and I, Dr. Moeller, yes. how do we work to make sure that those who come behind us have what they need, and we can capture that energy and that passion, that fervor for Christ, and lay the groundwork so that they can continue to do the work of the gospel behind us?
Nick?
Yeah, an effort to save the SBC, depending on what you mean by that. If you mean a series of organizations and buildings, I hope not. But if you mean by that, as John said, an effort to help local churches cooperate for the Great Commission to fulfill the role of the local church in training ministers from among their congregations, sending missionaries from among their congregations that are equipped to do the work of the ministry. I hope so. I hope that that's what we're about. Because, as Dr. Moore mentioned, what's the other option? You do it on your own, and you go to start another organization in which you'll have to have a mission sending agency and all these other things. And, you know, 20, 30 years from now, you have the same problems we're facing now. I think the better answer is stay around and help us fix the problems we have now.
Reminds me of a parable of a young church that said, we're going to do everything differently than what came before, and we don't want all the budget committees and the personnel committees and the this committee and then that committee. And so they determined they weren't going to have it until they had to have a budget and they had to have some personnel policies and all the rest. And the next thing they knew, it ended up that way. It reminded me of Henry Kissinger speaking about the United Nations, saying you start with the same people, you start with a blank sheet of paper, you're going to end up with the same thing all over again, regardless of what you call it. Mm-hmm. I think what Russ said is really important. I think it is a both and rather than an either or. But I think the plausibility for the future of the SBC has to be that the SBC is seen as the answer to a question.
Right.
It has to be seen as the means of accomplishing something that we passionately know before God that we must do in faithfulness to Christ. And I honestly believe, as a son of the Southern Baptist Convention and as one who has a unique ability to be all over the SBC and the experience of seeing the SBC at work, and also the experience of seeing what the alternatives really look like. Yes, there is certainly a better way of doing what we do. There is a lot to learn. We can look at our history and in retrospect see all kinds of things that we wish had happened differently and turned out differently. But the conservative resurgence, it better not be about wringing our hands and saying this is something we just need to leave behind and move on. We aren't starting with a blank sheet of paper. But if we are looking at what we have as an SBC, Jonathan, you've been pretty passionate in speaking about what you see is wrong. And I think all the math you articulated is very, very important. I think it's worse in reality than the way you presented it. So let me present the math in a little different way. I think the average Southern Baptist who'd be shocked by what you would have to say would be even more shocked by this. The average Southern Baptist who puts a dollar bill in the offering plate can count on, in the main, no more than one penny of that dollar getting to the international mission field. And it is because long before you get to the state conventions and the SBC, the local churches are keeping on average at least 94 cents of every dollar. And that's at least, because you're talking about offering plate dollars, you add in building programs and all the rest, and that's a significantly discounted figure. So let's just be as generous as we can be. Let's say that 6 cents goes on. And if on the main, and as an average, the state conventions are keeping about two-thirds of that. We're just doing an approximate math. That means of the 6 pennies that would go on, 4 would stay in the state conventions, which means 98% or 98 cents of that dollar would be staying in the United States. Now, people come back and say, yes, well, we take mission trips and all the rest. Well, I don't think any of us would live with the fantasy that that's a major proportion of the, of those dollars and cents. So that we have 6 cents going on, 4 cents stay. So you add that to the 94, 98 cents of that dollar staying in the United States. But of the 2 cents that goes on to the SBC, 1 penny then goes on to the IMB, and the other penny pays for, well, the seminaries and everything else the SBC does. Well, then we go back and say, why are we actually here and what are we doing? And we say, these are our passions. Now, I believe that the local church is organizing its ministry according to its passions. And I don't know of a healthy, thriving gospel church that doesn't have the passion to reach its Jerusalem and then reaching out to touch the world. I want to be careful here. We're not talking about profoundly anti-missions people. We're not talking about an anti-missions sentiment. We're talking about a localism that is choking out a global understanding of the gospel. And yes, I'll tell you, I think there's no way to address this without addressing the responsibility of the local church to decide how they're going to do this, both with respect to the allocations between the state conventions and the national convention. But if we're going to talk about that honestly, we got to say that before we get to whether 4 cents of the 6 cents goes on, or 2 cents goes on, or what, we got 94 cents that aren't even in that equation. What does that look like, Russ? I mean, what do we do with that?
I think some of that is tied together, because I think if you fix structurally some of the issues, you're going to better be able to show people what it is they're actually giving to. I mean, right now, the IMB, as John mentioned earlier, is serving more or less as a fundraising mascot for the rest of it, because nobody's ever putting forward, you know, you need to give to your state convention Sunday school clinics. They're not doing that. They're saying, let's give because we have people who haven't heard the gospel in India, and that's where the money's going. So that's not irrelevant to it, being able to say, look, this is where your money is going. When people have confidence in that, they're more able to do it. But your larger point is exactly right. Ultimately, it's not a structural issue, it's a spiritual issue, which means that you have to have pastors who are intensely thinking about how do I lead people toward being on mission. I think we can become overly global is another danger that can be there, where people are loving theoretical people overseas and they're not being on mission in their local context. That's not going to work either. You've got to have pastors who are shepherding, who are saying, wait a minute, let's love these people, but let's remember there are people over here. Yeah, let's remember and we're praying for these people, but remember you have these people right here. Let's not simply say be warmed and filled. That's a hard thing to do, but ministry is hard, and it takes constantly keeping that balance and thinking that through before your people.
Yeah, and we also need to realize that our missiology has to be updated when the uttermost parts of the world are coming to Jerusalem.
Exactly, that's exactly right.
And that's why the International Mission Board's new missiology, I think, is really exciting to me, because it takes that into effect. Yesterday, in our forum on Lottie Moon, we had two missionaries present who are working here in Louisville, reaching persons from Southeast Asia and South Asia. Mm-hmm. Now, that's new.
Right.
You know, and so when you talk about Jerusalem, Jerusalem's not just what we often think of it as, right. As Lexington and Louisville and Peoria and Birmingham. It's a very different world. Mm-hmm. Time is fleeting. So let me ask another question here, since this is the question most people want to get to first. I don't want to get to it first, but it's inevitable that we get there. Serving on the Great Commission Task Force, we asked Southern Baptists, tell us what's wrong. Is anything wrong? Tell us what you hope for, what you dream about. Tell us what you'd like to see happen. And I can tell you, we've heard from Southern Baptists, from a lot of them. Some of them say, we like it just as it is. Some of them say, everything's broken. And most of the people are somewhere in between. But if you're looking at the SBC, there are structural issues that everyone wants us to think about and talk about. Just with time fleeting, what are the structural issues that you would say the Great Commission Task Force, you've got to put that on the table?
I would say one is the giving program, the cooperative program. Does it best reflect what we at least say, with everything else we said, at least say are our priorities? And if people do have confidence in the giving program, I think that they'll potentially give more. And so I think the giving program needs to be on the table in terms of what we need to We need to shift. And I think we need a viable church planting network. And again, the IMB is the fundraising mascot. If I talk to people, talk to young guys through Baptist 21 all over the country, why is it that you're in the SBC? What do you love about the SBC? Number one answer every time, IMB. Mm-hmm. Another entity is not named ever. And when I talk to guys who are planting churches around the country, they're doing it through other means, through other networks. And the reason why this is, part of the reason why this is happening, why do you love the IMB? Singular focus, church planting. Why do you love this network? Singular focus, church planting. And so I think we're caught up in doing a lot of good things, but we need to prioritize the best things, and so that our people will be excited about using the mechanisms that we have in place.
Others?
I think we have to look at the effectiveness and the purpose of state conventions. If we're keeping the majority of dollars in the state, we have to show that there's a reason for doing that. And I think that will be difficult to prove, but we must be willing to look at that.
I think there are a generation of pastors who, as we talk about the excitement, the urgency for the Great Commission, are asking not only their congregations, but even themselves and their churches to streamline and to sacrifice and to simplify and to do things that are most effective and not necessarily most comfortable. And I think that this generation of pastors wants to be able to look to the denomination and see that same willingness to sacrifice and willingness to do things maybe that aren't the most comfortable, but would be most honoring to Jesus and effective to reach the nations.
I'll be a little less diplomatic than John was and just go ahead and mention North American Mission Board doesn't work. And the reason it doesn't work is because the IMB does a very good job of filtering people out. You're called to missions. You're not. IMB does a very good job. But you're able to do this. You're not. And when we put you on the field, you're going to be on the field, and we're going to see to it that you succeed. IMB does that very well, I think better than anybody else. NAM does not have that kind of track record. And that's one of the reasons why guys who are called to church planting, often they're looking for a network that will be honest enough with them to say, you don't have what it takes to be a church planter, but if you do, we're going to put you through a boot camp, literally and metaphorically, all the way through till you're going to be able to plant a church and keep it there. That's got to be changed, I think, in the SBC. The other thing is, when it comes to the state conventions, there's not a lot that can be done that I can see nationally to change the state convention mentalities. But the state conventions have to recognize and realize they're dealing with a different kind of person now with the younger generation. You could say to an older generation, you need to get in line or you'll never be president of the state convention. There's not a student on Southern Seminary's campus that I have ever met who has ever said, I really would love to be the president of the Alabama Baptist Convention. I have never met anybody who has that kind of aspiration or sentiment, and that's not a bad thing. I'm not sure what I would say if a student told me that's what he was aspiring to in ministry. So they've got to understand that that's different.
You would say, first of all, move to Alabama.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. That's right. That's right. So.
Well, I think what we're facing here is a sense of urgency that's shared, and there's a palpable, discernible sense of urgency. I think it's a healthy thing. I think if there is a reason to hit the reboot button in denominational life, we're looking at it. I think there is a real stewardship issue of opportunity. As a member of the task force, I can tell you that my greatest fear is that we'll be given an opportunity here and we'll blink. We won't say what we know we need to say. We won't ask the questions we know we need to ask. But on the other hand, I have to tell you that the expectations, not for the Great Commission resurgence, but for a task force that is headed towards a terminus in June of 2010, those expectations are absolutely enormous. And I want to say, as a member of that task force, and we've got a meeting coming right up before us in a matter of days, we have a deadline coming before us in a matter of weeks. The hope of this task force is that we can start the process. We can encourage the process. We can reframe and channel in healthy ways the process. But there is no way that we're going to be able to go home from the convention in Orlando in June 2010 and say, we have just accomplished a Great Commission resurgence. We're not going to be able to leave and say, we've done all that we can do, we've answered every question, it's all wrapped up, and we've now earned and achieved a Great Commission resurgence. And I want to go back to where we began with the parallel with the conservative resurgence and say, looking at retrospect, we were never able to say that about the conservative resurgence in the SBC. Benjamin Franklin famously answered the woman, anecdotally, you know, what government do we have? And he said, a republic if you can keep it. It will be up to every generation of Americans to own this government as an experiment in a democratic republic and to make it work. The conservative resurgence didn't happen in 79. It wasn't concluded in 90. All the milestones along the way subsequent to 1990 are the evidence of the conservative resurgence. But I have to ask in the year 2009 if it really happened, if in our churches there wasn't a resurgence of piety and passion and belief and doctrine. And when it comes to the Great Commission resurgence, there are enormous hopes. And each of you on this platform has reflected those hopes and concerns. And I just want to encourage Southern Baptists of every generation, my generation of young adults and the young adults coming behind, that this is ours to make of it what we will. And we're experiencing a lot of the pangs and challenges and groans of asking the right questions. And it's going to be up to a generation of even younger adults to answer whether or not there is a Great Commission in the SBC if Jesus tarries. I want to thank you all for participating. Dr. Moore, thank you for your words and counsel to us. Also, to Jonathan Aiken, thank you for being here, also representing not only yourself and Highview Baptist Church, but Baptist 21 and an organization of younger pastors and Southern Baptists who are really thinking hard and engaged. And I want to thank you for being a participant in these discussions. When some other people who are less committed to the SBC would have walked away and followed some other issue and perhaps a different kind of less healthy way of addressing these issues. And I want to direct people to Baptist 21. Tell people how they can find you.
Baptist21.com. Just spell it
That's
out.
Right. All right. And well, thank you for your participation today. And Chuck Lawless, thanks as always for keeping the Great Commission before us. And I want to thank you and through you, the Billy Graham School, for turning out so many pastors and missionaries who are making a difference in the world and are really serving as a model of what can happen in this generation, a generation ready to go anywhere right now and a generation waiting to see if Southern Baptists are ready to send. And Nick Moore, thank you for what you represent. I'm just so thankful that you represent a generation of young pastors who are really committed to biblical exposition, to the faith once for all delivered to the saints, and to a very winsome and an eager approach to working with others who are older and different in the SBC and those who are also now younger and even more energetic coming along looking to see if we're serious. I want to thank you all for being here today and for those who will be listening by podcast and looking at the webcast. We have begun a conversation. We want you to be a part of it. The Great Commission Task Force would love to hear from you. And we hope you are praying for us. But far more than that, not only Southern Baptists are waiting and watching, not only is the world waiting and watching, but the Christ who will judge us all will render the final verdict on whether or not there was a Great Commission resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention. God bless you. Thank you for coming. Let's continue the conversation.